Reverend Kathy Harrington is a colleague, a woman my wife Melissa and I knew as a classmate at Starking, our Unitarian Universalist Seminary in Berkeley. As she was finishing her coursework, Kathy's daughter Leslie came to live with her in the Bay Area and got a job at a nearby winery. When Kathy graduated and was called to her first congregation in Michigan, Leslie stayed behind, moving into a home with two other women. It was there that an intruder broke in the home and killed Kathy's daughter along with another of her housemates. Over this past more than a decade, Kathy has written and spoken extensively about her experience. She's been honest, open, vulnerable, and emotionally authentic. She has not professed to be a saint. 2 years after her daughter's death, she read reports of the Amish forgiving the mass school killer who devastated their community. Kathy said, in all of the anguish of a mother who lost her daughter in this way, she said to her grief counselor, "Damn the Amish. I don't believe or trust it. I couldn't forgive. So how could they?" Kathy reports her grief counselor's reply. "Their faith calls them to walk towards forgiveness." Just a few months ago, Kathy Harrington spoke again. This rugged, painful, decade-long journey, she said, has been filled with sadness, despair, revelation, joy, growth, humility, and grace. Lots of grace. But she added something else this time. "I vowed," our classmate and colleague said, "I vowed to walk a path toward forgiveness and healing." This summer we saw and heard what seemed like a more immediate response when a young white terrorist entered a peaceful Bible study and left it trailing the blood of those latest victims of white supremacy. The historic Mother Emmanuel congregation was again shaken to its foundations. But at Dylann Roof's arraignment in a surreal court setting, members of that congregation, families of the victims, offered a surprising message. For example, Nadine Collier, whose mother Ethel Lance had died, looked at her mother's murderer and said, "You took something very precious away from me. I will never get to talk to her ever again. I will never be able to hold her again. But I forgive you and have mercy on your soul." She continued, "You hurt me. You hurt a lot of people. But God forgives you. And I forgive you." One after another, they echoed those words. And a nation was awed at people, faith-filled, deeply religious people, with that kind of capacity to forgive. That's what I heard and what I felt when I worshiped at Mother Emmanuel just days after the tragedy. In an ornate stained glass windowed sanctuary, I heard Reverend Norval Goff proclaim with assurance, "Evil cannot outrun God's love." The service was devoid of bitterness, steeped in resolute faith and confidence, marked with surprising gratitude and filled with that spirit of forgiveness. David Remnick, writing in this week's New Yorker, makes it clear the situation in Charleston is also more emotionally complex. In his article tellingly titled Blood at the Root, Remnick discloses that not everyone involved is quite so quick to forgive. He interviews William Dudley Gregory, a member of Mother Emmanuel, who he describes as not all forgiveness. There was a fury in him, too. It was evil that came into our church. Pure evil, Gregory exclaimed. And the only way you can fight evil is with good. I think our church has been chosen. Do we know what for yet? No, we don't. William Dudley Gregory, we might say, hasn't really forgiven what happened. He's still in process, still searching for some meaning in it all. Remnick talks to others not so ready to forgive completely, though still walking toward forgiveness. The world's great religious traditions all agree we humans are fallible. We fail at times to embody our better selves. As such, in various ways, with various occasions and various sorts of rituals, these religions commend both asking for and offering forgiveness. That has been the work, the spiritual work this week for faithful Muslims and faithful Jews. We do wrong. We need to ask for forgiveness. We are wronged. We need to forgive. Forgive us, Jesus taught his followers to pray. Forgive us as we ourselves forgive others. But for many, probably most of us, forgiveness is not a switch we can flip. Forgiveness doesn't flow immediately out of the spigots of our souls at the turn of some knob. As Sharon Salzberg puts it, forgiveness is not a single action, but a process. That's not all that forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not weakness. David Remnick talked about this with the great African-American liberation theologian James Cone. Forgiveness is victory out of defeat, Cone said. It's you can't destroy my spirit. Cone described forgiveness as a kind of resilience. It's not bowing down. Importantly, forgiveness is also not justice. Kathy Harrington had to enter a courtroom in which her daughter's killer was present. She had to sit through that process. She didn't opt to intervene, to say, "Give me some time to walk toward forgiveness, and this man can simply be absolved from the consequences of his actions." Those saints from Mother Emmanuel expressed forgiveness, but they didn't ask that Dylan Roof go free. To forgive is not to say that actions should have no consequences. It's not letting someone off the hook. Forgiveness, as Maya Angelou reminds us, forgiveness is not for the other person. Forgiveness is not for the other person. It's for your own sake. It is, as Sharon Salzberg puts it, loosening the grip of fixation. Today we remind ourselves with emotional, spiritual honesty, forgiveness is not immediate. I've seen over and over again, Salzberg attests, that it is a process. That's what our classmate and our colleague was attesting to as well when she spoke of vowing to walk a path toward forgiveness. You've been wronged. You've been wronged. You yourself, in some way, momentous or relatively inconsequential. But you've been wronged. A parent, a child, some other family member, a spouse, a partner, your beloved, a friend, a colleague, perhaps a group, an experience, a particular congregation, a whole religion. It may have been a single incident or a whole pattern of behavior. It may have been inadvertent, but still hurtful, or a seemingly wanton act of insensitivity. It may have been something you suspect the one who hurt you couldn't even control. It may be a whole ideology, a whole way of thinking, a whole group of people with a worldview that you find so difficult, so painful. It may be something from your recent or from your long ago past. You've been wronged. Something has wounded you. And it hurts. Sharp pain or dull ache, constant agony or occasional memories that stir things up all over again. You've been carrying this pain for hours, days, weeks, months, years, decades, even. It's a heavy load, an emotional, spiritual burden. It has a tight grip on your soul still. But you can't simply forgive and forget. If it were that easy, if it were that easy, you would have done it already. Today I invite you to consider a different sort of question. Not, why don't you forgive, as if it were simply an either-or matter, but rather, what might it mean to walk toward forgiveness? What might it mean to take a step in the direction of forgiveness? I love Kathy Harrington's fierce anger, because it rings with emotional authenticity. I love, too, that she offers us all something profound from the depths of spiritual meaning. A vow to walk toward forgiveness. What might that mean? What might it mean for you to take a step? Make a move toward forgiveness. In silence. in the quiet of this time and this place, I invite you to ponder this question. How might you begin, or how might you continue to walk toward forgiveness?